All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason. Today, we have a first-time podcaster, which is awesome, but you wouldn't know it. Jill Miller is joining today to tell us about this world's first in all-women's team running across the Namibian desert. No one's ever done it until now. This was last year. And what was cool is, I'll tell the story real quick. Her husband, Aaron, you might know Aaron Miller. You might recognize that name because he's been on the show twice, and he also hosts the podcast Armchair Explorer and a number of other shows that they produce. And he has some awesome stories, great storyteller. Well, while Aaron and I were meeting up last year, while I was in Denver, he was like, hey, my wife's out on this adventure right now. And it was craziest sounding thing. He goes, she's running across a desert in Africa. And I said, what? Why am I talking to you? Why don't I talk to her? And he's like, if you can get her on the podcast, that'd be awesome. And this was, he was not wrong. This was incredible. Jill was facing some pretty big challenges in her life. She'll tell the story. You know, a lot of us are facing some sort of big challenge in life or some sort of, or many big challenges at the same time. And what Aaron suggested to Jill, which is what we often prescribe on this show, which is a big adventure or some sort of adventure, some sort of time in nature that you can focus on, that you can train for, and that when you experience is so exhilarating, so powerful, and can really help you carry through those really challenging times in life. And so when she committed, she was not ready, but she joined 17 other women from 12 countries to run across the Namibian desert and raise a bunch of money for women on a mission to help women who have been affected by war. And the expedition was just under 100 miles, 5 days, 4,000 meters of climbing. And remember, this is all sand, mostly complete sand. These are not easy miles. So as you listen, you might not think to yourself, you know, I need to run across the Namibian desert. I've heard so many great examples of different kinds of challenges people set themselves up for from our listeners, that whether it's, you know, piece by piece through hiking a trail every other weekend or trying to camp every month of the year, whatever that is, set yourself up, set a goal. It's going to help you, even if you're going through a challenge or not, it's going to help you live this life. So Jill, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for telling the story, and prepare to be very inspired. We've heard from Aaron Miller in the past. Well, today we're talking to Jill Miller, who also has a lot of adventures to talk about. And You know, Aaron hosts a bunch of podcasts, Armchair Explorer and all that, but we hear from him enough. Let's hear from Jill. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is a huge honor. I know this is your first podcast, and you have a pretty epic story to share and just adventure you were on. How I heard about it was I was in Colorado over in the fall, and I connected with your husband, Aaron, and he was telling me, he's like, oh yeah, I've got the kids right now. Jill is out, you know, in Namibia running across the desert. And I was like, what? And I'm like, why am I talking to you? I need to talk to her. And so I want to hear about this experience, because you were basically right in the middle of it back, you know, during when we met up. And I was like, I cannot wait to talk. So I'm really excited. But well, let me start with this. Where are you coming from today?
So I am here in Louisville, Colorado, just outside of Denver. I'm a native Scot, but along with Aaron, we've been hanging our hat here on the edge of the Rocky Mountains for, gosh, coming up 10 years now, I think. So, yeah, we've been here a while now.
Wow, that is what, 10 years. How are you liking it?
I love it. You know, I miss home. You always miss what you don't have, right? So I miss home, but we have a lot of family that visit, which is nice. It's just the blue sky days, and, you know, the winters are full of skiing and the summers are full of, you know, kind of hiking in the outdoors. So for me, it's a perfect place to be whilst the kids are little. You know, they don't have an opportunity to be bored and stuck in front of a screen too much. So that's nice.
What is kind of your adventure history or past? Did you grow up in a family that did things like this, or is this kind of a something you've discovered later on your own?
Well, I haven't really done any crazy adventures. You know, the adventure to Namibia was certainly, I've never done anything like that before. You know, I've never completed multi-day hikes or anything kind of out my comfort zone. So when I talk about adventure, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty normal family stuff, like hiking and camping, skiing, that kind of thing. So Aaron's the one that goes on the really big adventures. I have done cliff camping once. That's probably the wildest thing I've done, where you spend the night
right.
kind of on the edge. Yeah. So that's probably the only other thing that I've done that is like, that was kind of crazy. So this was a unique thing for me to get a chance to go and kind of participate in something that was kind of an extraordinary experience, really.
Oh, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about the adventure, the run across Namibia. How did you learn about this? What were kind of some of the steps to, I don't know. I mean, that's a big jump, honestly. So like,
yeah.
How do you even take those stepping stones to get to that point?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the mission itself is, there's a charity organization called WOM, Women on a Mission. And what they do is they invite women from anywhere around the world to go on an expedition where they fundraise money for a sister charity, Women for Women International. And so what they do is you get to go out on an expedition. It's usually something that's never been done before, or certainly something really pretty wild, pretty unique, something that's going to kind of hit those headlines. So you get a chance to go and explore at the same time as kind of raising money for sort of a greater need. So that is the kind of the background of where this expedition came from. And Aaron was interviewing Christine, one of the founders of Women on a Mission. And at the end of the interview, he said, my wife's got to go on the next one. Can you hold her a spot? It was many months later. He had this in his back pocket and didn't tell me for quite a long time. I think, like, I'm not sure if he was sure what my reaction was going to be. Actually, it's kind of a fun story. When we actually got onto the expedition, when I got an opportunity to kind of explain why I signed up for this mission. And so basically, we all got together. The mission, or I'll just backtrack a little bit here. So the mission itself is for 17 women from 12 countries around the world to attempt to become the first all-female team to cross the Namibian desert. So it's on foot. It's a trekking expedition. So we went off for 6 nights and 5 days to attempt to cross the desert from inland all the way to the Atlantic coast.
Wow.
Pretty wild opportunity to do something like that. And so the kind of expedition itself was in sort of three parts. So the first was we all met at a safari lodge. This was the luxury part at the beginning. We were a little training and met each other. And then there's the expedition itself crossing the desert. And we finished at the end, spending time in a township with local women and staying with them and kind of learning what their challenges were locally in Namibia. And so those are the three kind of sections of it. And when we met at the beginning at the safari lodge, we all sat around a big table together, and to get to know each other, the question around the table was, why did you sign up to be part of this expedition? And so when it got to me, they're like, why did you sign up then? And I said, well, actually, I didn't sign up to be on this expedition. My husband signed me up. And everyone's like, what? You know, this is really strange. It's like, yeah, I didn't choose to be here. My husband signed me up. And so really what had happened was we were going through a really tough time, and I was personally going through a really tough time in our life, and was suffering from a lot of depression and anxiety. And so Aaron kind of had this idea that maybe if I did something that was just completely out of the ordinary, that I would have a kind of a goal, something to kind of get out of my own head, if you like, and something to work towards. So he said, I've signed you up for this trip to cross the Namibian desert. And he told me this. He said, well, I don't know if you listened to the episode with Christine when they went to Siberia, but it's with that team of women. Well, it just happened that the week before I just listened to that episode, I got to the end of it and I was like, these women are insane. These women are crazy, like total respect, but there's no way I could ever do anything like that. You know, fast forward a few days and I'm being told that I'm going on the next expedition.
Oh, gosh. How did you feel about that? Is that something you wanted to do? I mean, you obviously were impressed, but like there was no thought when you listened to say, you know what, maybe one day I'll do that.
No, I listened to it and I thought, these women are amazing. They're so brave. And their expedition was a little more wild than crossing the desert. But for me, you know, that was the idea of doing something like that. I was really afraid straight away. I didn't say yes right away. I had to do lots of research and make sure, you know, that I felt safe to do it before I committed. And there was no pressure. Aaron said, look, I'm happy to make a donation to this organization if you don't want to do it. But it was kind of that whole fear of missing out. I didn't want to be sitting there in September and thinking, I could be in the desert right now. And here I am still in the midst of the current challenges.
Yeah. One of the challenges that I know y'all went through that, you know, it's not, I know the mission, you're talking to women who've been affected by war and whatnot. I know you didn't go through that, but you did experience a pretty wild loss. Your home, there was a crazy wildfire that popped up in your town. And I know your house didn't burn down, but it got basically ruined from the smoke. And that was a huge ordeal. Was that part of it?
Yeah. So basically what happened was I was already feeling really down, kind of coming out of COVID, you know, living in a foreign country and going through that time. I was already kind of feeling really isolated. Mm-hmm. And I'm the sort of person that on the outside, I'm really, really busy with work. I do tons of volunteering. If you meet me in the street, there's no way I've got any depression or anxiety, right? I put on a great front, but underneath I was finding life tough and I was feeling kind of isolated through that time. And then on December 30th, we had to evacuate for a wildfire, and over 1,000 homes in our town burnt down in just a handful of hours. And everything burnt down in our street up to our house. And like, see, our house was standing, but everything inside was damaged, had to be replaced, from mechanicals like water heaters and all the way to all of our belongings. So it kind of had to go down to the studs. But unfortunately, the insurance process is really challenging. And so it was 16 months later, we still were in hotels and Airbnbs and moving around and still hadn't replaced anything and still fighting just to get them to even start the work. So it was a really stressful process. And that was tough. That was a lot. I don't like confrontation, so I found that a really hard time. But kind of what happened that was worse is just a couple of days after the fire, my dad died suddenly. Mm-hmm. And so something worse happened than losing my home and my belongings, which, you know, you get your head around. Well, I managed. I cope with the loss of things much more than I did the memories and of the house. But then my dad happening was, that just kind of floored me. And because of COVID, I hadn't seen him since before then. So, you know, it was a couple of years since I'd seen him. And I made that mistake of, you know, the night of the fire, I'm texting him and I'm telling him I'm okay. But I didn't call him back. He called me like three times. I didn't call him back. The next call is that he's passed away. So it was, everyone was kind of stressed immediately off the fire. And I just was like, well, something worse happened than that. And that was losing my dad. And it took, you know, I feel like I'm 2 years now from there, from that happening. And, you know, it takes a long time to recover from something like that. And so, you know, you put on, a brave face for the kids and you do your best to just like make everything feel as normal as you can because they're not in their home. They've lost their things. And so, yeah, I kind of went into a little bit of a challenging time in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How soon, you know, did this adventure get on your radar after this was happening? Was it months? Was it, you know, I know all this is relatively recently, all of it, including
yeah,
the adventure.
So it was, I think it was about a year after that Aaron signed me up for it. And it was just this last September that I went on the expedition itself. It's funny, the last 2 years feel like they've been squeezed into a few months. It's amazing the kind of the passage of time when you're in the thick of it. Yeah.
What, I mean, you know, looking back on the loss of your home and then your dad just days later, I cannot believe how close together those were. Yeah. What would you say, having that and then having this goal of an adventure not long after, you know, what would you say were some of the things that helped you get through that? That, you know, have, if you ever face a challenge like that again, it's like, okay, I've learned this lesson. I've learned
yes.
that I need to do this whenever something like that happens again.
Yeah, I think that it was having a purpose or something that was more important than myself. I think self-care and looking after yourself is really hard when you're feeling low. Like, you can get yourself up and out for your family, but it's hard to look after yourself. And so I hadn't been to the gym. I hadn't really been out hiking. And so suddenly, like, having a purpose that was about the team. So it's like, I wasn't gonna let the team down. I was not match fit when I signed up for this. I knew I had a long way to go to get ready to be able to kind of walk those distances. And so just, you know, it didn't matter how tired I was or what was going on, I was going to turn up to those classes or turn up for those hikes because I was not going to let the team down. So it gave me a purpose that was outside of myself. And then the other thing was the fundraising, because Women for Women International, that charity is focused on helping women in war-torn parts of the world. So they're women that are displaced, many of them. And okay, I'm displaced from my home, but my family are not at war. My husband's coming home from work. So, you know, insurance are paying for a hotel. Like, I didn't have the sort of any of the trauma that they have, but I'm still experiencing those, you know, those kind of losses of being kind of, you know, things getting taken away. And so it was kind of meaningful in that way to sort of be raising money for something where these women really needed support. In a way, like, I wish, gosh, imagine if in Ukraine there's someone on the phone setting you up with an Airbnb and helping you with all this stuff. Like, you know, the what they're going through is really, really tough. And so to kind of raise money for that, and we raised $70,000, so good chunk of money. And it's a really important charity because they really focus on they're empowering women, education. So they do kind of go right into like a war zone to provide immediate aid, but their focus is actually more on the long term. You know, because if your husbands or sons don't return, then suddenly women need to have new skills in some cultures that they might not have had to, or work that they may not have had to have done in the past. And they also focus on kind of educating men as well, because again, in some cultures, it's maybe not been appropriate for women to do some of the jobs that they now need to do. And so it's educating men to allow women to do some of these roles, and getting everyone kind of back to work or with skills. It can be anything from a sewing machine to a goat, depending on where you are. So the work they do is really important. And so I just think there was just like it was just a little bit of a kick to me to be like, you're fine. You know, look, you have everything you need and you're safe. And so I think on both those fronts, it kind of just gave me a little bit of perspective to kind of get out of my own mind somewhat.
Had you ever dealt with that level of depression before?
Well, it's interesting because I think you interviewed Aaron a while back about the tsunami story when Aaron and I were in the tsunami.
Yes,
in Thailand.
I think the first time we talked in Denver. Yeah, because I was living in Denver at the time.
Yeah. So I didn't know that he had done that interview with you, and so I heard him telling the story from his perspective for the first time on your show. And wow. I you know, I just have like the podcast I listen to. So then they send me more stuff. So it's like, oh, so that just came onto my feed. Right. And I'm like, whoa, because we haven't really talked about it and we were separated. So we have a different story. And so that was kind of after I listened to your episode, I decided, OK, I need to write down my story. So I spent like hours just like free writing everything that happened and then kind of closed the book on that. But from the tsunami, I'd had quite a bit of anxiety and sort of that kind of PTSD piece where I kept thinking something catastrophic was going to happen. So I wasn't worried about small things. It was the worst thing in the world happening. And then sort of, you know, a few years later, the fire happens. That's the worst thing in the world. And then 3 days later, my dad dies. That's the worst thing in the world. So it brought back a lot of that kind of PTSD or catastrophic thinking. And so that was kind of where a lot of the anxiety came from, because I'd hear a siren and, oh, well, that must be one of my kids, you know, what's happened.
Gosh, yeah.
And so I knew, because I'd experienced it in the past, I was able to have those feelings and think they're not real. I didn't let them take over, but I couldn't stop them coming in, if that makes sense. And I think to a certain extent, you know, we all have a little bit of that in us. And I think those are the things that are out with our control. And if you're someone who likes to kind of control what's going on in your life, those are the big pieces. There's nothing you could do to prevent those. You have no control over them. And so I guess like going and thinking and doing this Namibian adventure, it was saying, I have to let go of control to do this. If I'm going to do this, we're going to be off communications for many days at a time. I'm thinking I'm going to get eaten by a desert lion or stung by a scorpion, because I've over-researched everything because I got bad PTSD. So I mean, the things that were going to happen to me on this trip went in advance of going, like I had the whole like spectrum of what are all the things that could go wrong in Namibia. Okay, but I'm still going to go anyway.
Wow. Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that helped make this show possible.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. That is awesome. So when you first got the news, I know Aaron didn't really ask, you kind of told you, but when you first got the news about it, were you saying, okay, I need this, or no, I absolutely will not do this? Like, where were you on that spectrum?
It was more, I needed information to understand, you know, was it a safe place to go? And And all of the things that I was worried about, they weren't relevant when I got there, but it was, I needed to understand information. I just felt like I had to do it, whether I wanted to do it or not. I trusted in him as well. You know, he knows me so well. And if he thought that this was going to be something that I should do, then I should. And also, it's like, what an amazing opportunity. Like, not, you know, loads of people would love to do this. Anyone I spoke to here, especially in this part of the world, was like, wow, I'd love to do something like that. That's amazing. And it's, and so it was, how can you turn down an opportunity like that? So it was almost like, no matter how afraid I was about saying yes, I was going to say yes anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. And so you really did trust. I mean, that speaks to y'all's relationship and trusting each other and knowing that's something you needed at the time. So once you kind of committed to doing this and said, all right, I'm doing it, how do you even approach that? And also tell us about the adventure itself. How far did you have to go? Tell us the time frame, like physically, what was involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So the desert trip was crossing from inland from the Kuseb River and near the town of Windhoek, and it's on right in the inland part of the Namibian desert and crossing over to the Atlantic Ocean. And so it was kind of like walk to the sunset and look for a huge big shipwreck at the end. That was kind of like that way, that was it. And so they thought it would take us sort of 6 nights, 5 days to make it across. And it was about 125 kilometers was the distance, which doesn't seem a huge amount, but it was massive elevation gain as well. And actually at the end of it, we ended up walking kind of 144, 145 kilometers because dunes are not straight. So we ended up getting lost a little bit and going in the wrong, you know.
And it's also sand. I mean, it's not even like you're hiking on, I mean, I know there's a lot of land. I'm looking at the map, but it's not easy miles.
No, and actually where we crossed, there was as soon as we got started on the trek, it was sand and then sand dunes. We didn't walk on any ground from the first step onto the dried riverbed to the very end. We didn't walk on anything but sand. And wow. Some of the sand was up to your knees, you know, like it was really, really deep, deep sand. And then the ways in which I can describe sand, I think like, the Scots have like something like, I don't know, 200 words to describe rain. I'm pretty sure the Namibians must have the same for sand, because there's soft sand, hard sand, deep sand, different colored sand, stuff that looks like diamonds, stuff that looks like bright red. Like it was ever changing, the look of the sand and how it felt underneath your feet. But so it was quite intense in that regard. And I believe it was like 9,000 meters or something was our elevation gain. So up and down all of those dunes, because they're some of the highest in the world. You know, we pretty much climbed to Everest over the 5 days in terms of elevation gain alongside the distance.
Talk to us a little bit about what you were seeing and what was this perspective. Had you ever seen anything like it?
You know, I haven't. And, you know, I've been lucky to travel to a lot of amazing places. And, you know, you go to somewhere like Utah, where you have a very dry kind of landscape, but it doesn't even compare to that. It's a kind of out of world experience. And I think that when we first stepped out on kind of on the very beginning of the hike, I was pretty scared, to be honest. I was alert, I was excited, but I was pretty scared. But within the first like 20 minutes, you're just hit with such extreme elements. And that was unexpected for me. I expected we might have some wind, it would be hot, but it was extreme from the very first step. So the wind was so intense, you're covering every single part of your skin. And you know, you put your bag down for a second and it's covered in sand. And the heat was, because it's that dry heat, I don't know if you can kind of imagine if you're in a sauna and you take that, you know, a deep breath in a sauna and you kind of feel like that heat going right through your lungs. It felt like that. And then the wind, and so your head's down right away. I thought, oh, it must be just what it's going to be like today. But no, it was, the weather was extreme. from start to finish. And it was so cold at night. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't pack appropriately. I mean, they said it might get a little colder at night. No, it was freezing cold at night.
Wow.
And so you're really doing these extremes, and from like the heat to the cold and the wind. And yeah, it's kind of like the first thing I felt was a sort of kind of sensory, it was the sensory experience and the elements. That was my first, I think that's the first thing that kind of takes over your brain. You're not really thinking about the walk or yourself or anything deeper at that point. You're just like, whoa, where am I? This doesn't feel like I'm on Earth anymore. And that was just took a little bit of getting used to right away.
Did you get the sense that the other women on the team were feeling this way?
You know, I think there was some people that were a lot more experienced. You know, one of the ladies has climbed to the top of Everest, you know, so she's got some pretty solid strength in there. And a lot of them had done multi-day expeditions before, but there were a handful of us who were new to this. One of the ladies from Ivy from Bangladesh, she'd never even been camping before. And so, like, that was a massive step for her. You know, she'd never even done that, let alone do a multi-day walk. So there was a real kind of variety of skills. But I think everyone was hit by the weather and the heat on that first day. And you get used to something, but I think it is just, you know, coming straight from all of our different places around the world to suddenly this super dry, windy heat was... And also the fact that it was on sand, like I didn't think we would be on sand from start to finish. I thought, oh, you know, it's the desert, like the deserts we have over around where I live, you know, it's gravel paths and some hard mountains and yes, a bit of sand, but this was only sand from start to finish.
Wow. So it was, you know, the stereotypical desert experience. Oh, you're just on sand the whole time. And yeah, like you said, over here, you know, you get a lot of rocks. You get, you know, the desert can mean a lot of different things here in the state, even though they're huge and big. But that's like,
yes,
the cartoon version of desert is in Africa, where it's like just sand. Same with like the Middle East and whatnot. That is wild. So how did you find yourself holding up physically through this experience? Did you feel like it was more or less doable than you imagined or what you trained for?
Well, this was a really strange thing that I almost, like, it's hard to explain to people when you get back, that I was totally energized by the experience. And there was I had a couple of like really big moments that I can share with you that I think maybe helped kind of make it easier to cope with, but mm-hmm. I didn't feel pain. And this is sounds totally weird, but I had blisters on the tops of my thumbs from my pulley pushing down on my poles into the deep sand trying to get up the dunes. I had blisters on my feet. I had a big sore on the back of my leg. My Achilles tendon was pulled, like stuff that would have been sore, but I didn't feel it. And I'm not a brave, wow, strong person. I think I've clearly like examined that's not me. I'm not a big adventurer, but I could see it. And I knew it was kind of sore, but I didn't feel it. And it was the weirdest thing. And I couldn't work out why am I not feeling pain? Like I hardly slept and I woke every morning and I felt alert and awake and ready. And I really didn't sleep well night. I found the nights a little scary, to be honest. And so I really didn't sleep a lot. I was in a completely different time zone, all that stuff. But I felt every morning I woke up and I saw this beautiful sunrise and have my little cup of coffee. And I used to kind of be up first and I'd walk around the camp. And then as I got more brave, I'd walk a little bit further in the mornings. And then the desert is so still first thing in the morning. And it's kind of got a little bit hard and maybe it looks like the bottom of a seabed and these kind of hard ripples. And then you just watch this sun come up. And right now you're freezing. You got your big jackets on and you know what's ahead, and you sort of feel this energy kind of rise up with the sun and warm you up. And then you know, okay, right, here we go. I'm about to head off and do this again. And it felt great. You know, I didn't ever think, oh gosh, I got to do this again. I was kind of ready each day to take on the challenge and was getting more confident as I went along that I am actually going to be able to do this. I'm going to make it.
Wow. Yeah, I guess, you know, that's never a guarantee, but I guess you didn't even feel, you know, it was still up in the air whether you could do something, do this or not.
Yeah.
Despite being all sand, did you feel like there was a lot of change that you experienced throughout the entire, all the mileage? I know even for a small area, things can change drastically. Did it feel very similar? Did you notice a change as you got closer to the coast?
Yeah, it did change a lot. So we kind of started off, we were walking through like almost what was probably maybe a lake at one point, or very, very flat ground with all these different colored stones on the ground, like tiny little, it's all sand, but like tiny, every color you can imagine. It didn't really make sense. Tiny little black and red. And then we got into these areas where you'd have a dune, and then you'd have what's called a dune street. And in this particular desert, it's about a kilometer across in the dune street, and then you go up another dune. And I love those because you could kind of lose everybody on those dunes, because they would go over one and drop down, and then you couldn't see them. And so if you kind of hung back a little bit, you could just have the desert all to yourself. And then later it kind of, we had these much more what they called messy dunes, which was just like they were all on top of each other, and that's where we kind of all got lost, and that was a tough day. And then the really, really high dunes where you're taking one step forward, sliding two down, incredibly hard cardio. And you really are making, it takes forever to get to the top because it's so deep. You're just sliding back all the time. And you're trying to find someone who's gone ahead of you and put your foot into their footprints a little bit, just to sort of get a little bit of purchase on the way up. And so it was ever changing. And then the very end is a completely different landscape, it changed, and it changed colors too. You know, the desert, it kind of had this like cayenne pepper red rust over the top of it, which apparently is a lot of the iron content, and that's what gives the Namibian desert that red color. But then as the sun changed in the day, you know, you'd start and you had no shadow at all. It was just you, and then you would watch your shadow get longer and longer and longer and longer towards the end of the day. And as it did that, the light changed. So sometimes the desert looked like pure white, and then sometimes it would look bright red. And so it, you know, the landscape changed, the colors changed. We would see like the sandstorms in the distance coming in. And that was, you know, you were like, what was this coming for us? You know, right enough, oh, here we go. And then we get really into the thick of the wind again. So yeah, it's ever changing, really, the landscape.
What's something about the experience that maybe the most unexpected thing that happened?
Yeah. Well, I think it started kind of, there's kind of like a couple of things that happened that were part of my personal journey. And the first one was, we started walking, everyone was sharing stories with each other because, you know, we've never met each other before, and everyone's telling their story, and it kept kind of coming up about my current history with the fire and my dad and so on. And I realized like I've come to let this go, you know, I've come here to put this down, and here I am talking about it. And so I said to one of the ladies, I'm like, I think I kind of just need to maybe share the story with everybody once, and then ask if they wouldn't mind not talking to me about it again, because I kind of, this is my chance to really get away from all of that. Mm-hmm. And it was not my comfort zone to kind of do that, but it kind of gathered everyone together and tried to tell my story really quickly. And then Valerie said, stop, slow down, tell us it properly. So she really kind of made me, you know, really explain what was going on. And the kind of the best part of that for me was that afterwards, Akta and Ivy, two of the other ladies, came up to me, and they were tears streaming down their face, and they had also recently lost a parent. And so me sharing my story kind of gave them permission to share what was going on in their lives. And then we all decided in that one piece of the desert to just put it down there and then and leave it aside. And as I carried on walking, I thought, well, I've done my best, but I know it's going to keep coming back in my mind. I'm not going to be able to put this down. And that was what was really cool, is because I did actually get to put that down. And it kind of came through two kind of things that happened. And the first was kind of a fun story. It was one night we wanted to go stargazing, and a lot of people crashed right away, but there was no way. I was staying awake for every moment I could because it was so amazing. So you had to stay up a little late to really see the stars come out.
I can imagine it was unbelievable when they did.
It's unbelievable. So I've got pictures on my phone, and it's the whole galaxy. It looks like you're looking through a telescope. You know, when I show them to people, they're like, "That's not on your phone." I'm like, "Yeah, that's." Can you imagine what that actually looked like? Like no filter. And wow. Amazing shooting stars. Like I saw a meteor that went across that was enough time for me to say to Kimberly next to me, I said, "Do you see that?" And she's like, "Yeah, oh my God." And it's still going.
Wow.
It was like, what? And it was kind of like a Disney like streak across the sky. And then we were like wild after that.
I would love to see that.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad someone else saw it because, you know, you couldn't believe that it had happened. We were about to head off up to the top of the dunes to do some stargazing. But right before that, we heard the story about these white lady spiders. And Namibia is amazing. Like the stories about the resilience of the animals and what they do are amazing. And these little spiders, I think they're quite big. They're a venomous spider, and they stay on the top of the dune. And if they feel that they're under threat, then they throw themselves off at like 60 miles an hour. And whilst they throw themselves off, they spin a web ahead of them and create a little basket of this web, and then they catch themselves in their own web later down the dune. So we just heard this story about these spiders, and then suddenly it's like, okay, now I'm at the top of the sand dune. I am a long way from camp. It is pitch black. I'm right, you know, we're hands and knees, or you're going to fall over, like right to the edge, and we're lying back. And I said, "Oh, can I go in the middle? I don't want to be on the edge. You know, I'm like, I'm about to get eaten by this spider, you know." And then someone next to me said, "You're not scared." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm really scared." And they're like, "There's nothing scared about you. You do realize you're in Namibia, in the middle of the desert, at the top of a sand dune in pitch black. You're not scared." And it was really small statement, but it was probably one that was kind of the start of me changing my perception on this walk, because I was kind of going back and I'm like walking back to my tent going, "Oh, I guess I'm not scared. Like, I am in the middle of Namibia in the desert doing this thing. Okay, maybe I think I'm scared, but I'm not." And it was kind of the beginning of me finding a little bit of that strength that I used to have that I'd maybe buried a little bit with recent experiences.
Well, this seems like it was just exactly what you needed to do. And you, and what's cool about it, hearing about it, your attitude seems so positive and so appreciative in the moment. It's almost like you understood right then and there how important this was. Because a lot of times on adventures, you know, we realize that in reflection rather than in the moment. But it sounds like your mindset was being very, very present.
Yeah, well, I think I hadn't realized it in that point. I kind of started with all this fear and the elements, and then I kind of had that moment of thinking, "Oh, I have a little bit of strength." And then the next day is when I said to the girls, "I'm going to hang back and walk on my own." You know, I'd realized at this point that no animals were going to get me. The desert lions are actually way further north. I was totally safe. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to kind of hang back and walk on my own. And it was in that moment that kind of I just kind of became mesmerized by the sand dunes. And I remember just stopping kind of under the spell of the space. And I remember just stopping and taking these huge, big, deep breaths and just standing there just like, and like my breath would go on like forever. And in that moment, I just stood still. And I remember using the words pure bliss in my head. And I just had this crazy moment on my own. It was kind of like a high, like I never felt this in my life before. And I felt like my breath was so huge and my eyes were kind of half shut. And it was kind of an out of the world experience. that's when I had that bliss moment, that's when everything just started to calm down for me. And that was probably, I think that was on the third day. And everything after that point just calmed down completely. And I realized later that I don't know when exactly it happened, but after that moment, I was walking and I realized I can't hear my inner voice. You know, the back chat?
Yeah.
And my back chat's not always very kind, and it never shuts up. Like, I'm someone that's walking up the stairs and I'm counting the stairs. It's like, stop, you know, it's never quiet. And I suddenly realized, like, where's that person? They're not giving me grief. They're not even, it doesn't even always have to be negative, you know, but there's always that sort of incessant chatter, and it's totally gone. And it was, I didn't expect that. I didn't ask for that. I didn't expect that. I had no expectations going into this. It was just a chance to get away, right? And to do something amazing. But I didn't have any expectations. But I totally quietened my inner voice. And I kind of feel like in some way that landscape sort of gave me the freedom to be fully present in a way that I never have before. I'm not sure if I ever will again, like that, just absolutely in the moment. And it was really special, actually. It was really, I can close my eyes now and I can be in that spot where I took those deep breaths. I can go there anytime now and take that breath and feel like I'm there. It's so imprinted in my mind now.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible. That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
Oh, man, that sounds magical. I was closing my eyes thinking about it while you were talking. And yeah, it's crazy how those moments, you know, everything, all the trouble of flying and dealing with family coordination and, you know, getting to that point is a lot of work, but you know, it all is worth it for those little moments that just stick out and where everything just seems to align. And now you have that memory and that experience, and it makes it worth it. What was your mindset as you approached the end of this? What were you kind of thinking about as you got through to the last few days of this experience?
Yeah. The very, very end, I start to feel my anxiety coming back as we were getting closer, because it was suddenly like, well, is everyone okay? Like, I hadn't really thought about family. I really put everything down, which I honestly didn't think I could have, but I did. And as we got closer, I did start to feel a little bit like, okay, I'm, you know, in a couple of days, we're going to have cell phone reception again, or we're going to be able to get communication to our family. I wonder if everyone's okay. And so that's, you know, as we got closer, I would start to get a few of those feelings. But mostly it was just kind of, I didn't want it to end, actually. You know, going over the last sand dune, we were the very top, and we thought we saw the Atlantic Ocean, and everyone got their flags out from their different countries, and we were cheering and screaming. And then we all went running down the last sand dune, woohoo, all the way to the bottom. And this was, you know, all we were going to do is just cross over and be at the sea. Except for it wasn't the Atlantic Ocean. It was a salt flat. It was a total mirage. We were nowhere near the sea. And that last day, the salt flat we walked across was brutal. It was so windy, you were getting knocked over. You couldn't, you know, your poles were getting blown in the air, and it was tiny, tiny little shells, and like the sand was just like hailstones in your face. It was so extreme, and everyone was going all over the place. We had to use our whistles to try and keep people together, and it was probably most people's least favorite piece was going through that last, even though it was flat, it was so harsh. But I just kept like going like this, and I kept spinning around in circles. Like I didn't want it to end, and I didn't care that it was sore. And at one point I was kind of sheltering one of the girls with my jacket, because I was like, she was just like really struggling. I'm like, I took my jacket. I didn't care. Like, I didn't want it to end. I wanted to stay in this world just a little bit longer. And I didn't care that I was tired at the end. I wanted to keep going. And when we actually saw the Atlantic Ocean at the end, we saw this tiny little black spot. I'm like, is that it's an Edward Bolin, which is an old shipwreck. And we see the black dot. I'm like, is that it? And everyone's like, I don't know. And then we go a little further. And this is the first man-made thing we've seen, you know, in 5 days. And finally, we realize that that's it. And everyone's poles in the air and really like cheering. And I thought I was going to feel this something like really amazing at the end, but it was almost like, oh, okay, I guess I didn't, I was really excited to get to the end, but I didn't have that, the feeling I kind of expected to have. And I think it was that whole thing it was the journey for me. It wasn't getting to the end. I knew a few days in that I was probably capable of making it. And so then it was just being present. I think that's part of being present, right? It's not about getting to the end. It's being there on the journey. So yeah, no huge moment at the end for me, but definitely dipping your feet in the Atlantic. And it's freezing because we're on the Southern Atlantic Ocean there on Namibia, and you've got all of the weather coming up from the Antarctic. So the sea is fierce, huge, huge surf and freezing cold. So I kind of imagine we'd run into the sea at the end, but no chance. Like, this is freezing cold water. And the weather was horrendous at the end, like big storm and it kept going right to the bitter end. Even up the Atlantic Ocean, it was still kind of battering down on us.
Wow. And the sand, I mean, it's sand dunes and desert all the way to the ocean.
Yeah. All the way. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All the way.
And that's the Skeleton Coast, correct?
That's the Skeleton Coast, yeah. And so, there was bones nonstop. You know, once we got closer to the Atlantis, the Skeleton Coast, I think, is named after all of the shipwrecks, because there's multiple shipwrecks along there. But there's also loads of animal bones. So when we arrived, we saw loads of seal colonies and flamingos and jackals, and it was very wild. You were definitely in their territory. It was kind of like you spent the night there on the ocean, just right next to the sea, really. And you know, it was, you were right in the heart of nature there. We saw jackals taking pups, seal pups and stuff. It was,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was kind of hard to see, but it's wild. You know, you're definitely, I think in Namibia, Namib means like place of no people. And that's definitely what it feels like there. You know, it's such a vast space and it's totally untouched by humans. I couldn't decide if it was the beginning of the world or the end of the world. You know what I mean? But you couldn't survive there. You're not meant to be there in some ways. You know, you kind of felt like you were sort of tiptoeing and having permission for just a short time to cross the desert, and much of it was beginning to petrify. So we slept one night right in the middle of petrified sand dunes, and you could see the crustaceans from the ocean, you know, on the edges. And so you were really kind of walking through that passage of time.
You finish, I assume it took a while to get back home, get to the airport, say goodbyes and everything. What did you feel like was most different about you as you returned back to your family? What did you think would be something that would just always be different because of this?
Yeah, I kind of had my reflections at home came a little bit later. As soon as I got home, it was like one of the kids was sick. Aaron was going off on an assignment to Utah. Life was just carrying on without me. And that was that was a good thing in a way. I realized, okay, I can put this down and go away. It's not all going to crumble. And it made me think, oh, I can do another adventure. Like, I can go away again. This is okay. And I was right back into the thick of picking up all of the fire issues. And so nothing had really changed at home, but I felt like I had a new strength. I couldn't fix or change anything that was still going on, but I recognized that I had a little more strength to cope with it. So I think that was a big thing. I felt like I had a new calling for nature. You know, I wanted to find, I was like, where do I find that bliss, that kind of euphoric feeling? Where do I find that in my own backyard? And maybe that's in nature. Maybe, you know, nature has a lot of healing power for me, and to recognize that, look where I live, you know, if maybe you just need to get out and about and have a little adventure to kind of to fill you back up again. So those were the you know, those were the two kind of main things personally. And then I think the big piece that I kind of wrote down, I wrote a long diary when I was there, and was gratitude, really. And it was, you know, feeling grateful for this beautiful place that I was allowed to visit for a short time, and thinking of all the friends and family that donated to allow us to have the chance to go and experience that and create that awareness and raise the money that we did. Yeah, and I think it's kind of that I wrote down, it gave me the gift of peace, strength, and the courage to let go. I'm so grateful. So that's the last line of my diary that I wrote. The courage to let go was a big thing for me personally, just to put it all down. And yeah, I feel so lucky that I got to experience this. And, you know, I'm not a wild adventurer. I know you have a lot of people on your show that do these incredible things, and I'm not a highly trained person who's done any kind of adventures like this before. This is, you know, the everyday person going off and doing this. So that's, anyone can do it if they get the opportunity to, I guess.
So what do you, does it make you look at home any different, or trying to find adventure closer to home more often? Like, how do you feel this has changed the way you view the world around you?
I think that I kind of seeking to go and do something on my own again, because I think, as you know, I don't know what that's going to be, not necessarily anything big like this, but I realized that the really tough stuff is what made it. Like, it was, you know, getting to the end of that day and falling down into the sand by your tent, and just like, whoa, that was unbelievable. And, you know, the fact that it was hard is what made it good. And so I kind of like the idea of challenging myself to do something that doesn't immediately sound possible, or doesn't immediately sound like it's going to be a great thing, like something difficult, and maybe not something as extreme as this, but something that I wouldn't normally do. Like, that's what I'd like to find again. And I'd quite like to go off and do it on my own, because I think that was an important part of it, to actually say it's okay to go off on your own for a little bit, because you're going to have a lot more energy when you come back, once you've had a little escape.
Yeah. So what do you think you want to do now? I mean, any ideas? Is there anything that's kind of, you know, that would be interesting. You've got a lot right near you.
Yeah, I know. Well, actually, the next expedition that Women on a Mission are doing is they're going to the Arctic, and they're going to be kayaking for, I think, 10 days around the ice caps. And so I wrote to them to say, okay, what's the deal with this? And it'd already been signed up within overnight. They'd already filled all the spots. So I'm on the wait list for that. So you never know. Maybe I'll be going to the Arctic in a kayak. I don't know how to kayak, so that's going to involve some different training. But it doesn't have to be as extreme as that. I think that even just doing there's some beautiful multi-day hikes here where you do a little bit of, you know, take your little tent, do some camping on the way, something like that would be great.
You necessarily didn't see the need for adventure in yourself. It was a spouse. You know, Aaron kind of helped to see that. And what would you tell people who might not think that adventure is for them?
I definitely wasn't physically fit when I said yes to this. And then, you know, I think of Ivy, who had never even been camping before. There was people on that expedition who weren't as strong as the others, but they decided to do it anyway. And Ivy said she did it because she wanted to show to her daughter, look what your mom can do, you know, and show her that kind of strength and so you can go on an adventure for lots of different reasons, but I don't think that you're being physically in the best shape of your life should hold you back, because I think, you know, you on the media, you see all these people that go on the adventures and wow, they're in great shape and they've done all these amazing things before. But I think adventure is a lot more accessible to everybody, and it can start small. You know, if you've never been camping before, you know, you don't have to go far to experience that. And I just think for me, putting myself out of my comfort zone and doing something challenging and difficult that I didn't know if I could do is what made it rewarding. And so I would say, if you are, don't be put off by not being ready for this, throw yourself in, and what's the worst that can happen, right?
Oh, I love that. That is awesome. This will be my last question. If there's a story that you think, you know, say, fast forward a few years and someone say, hey, what was your favorite story or experience from that adventure? What do you think is going to be one of the first thing that comes to mind? It might have been one you've already shared, but it might be something new.
You know, I think when I look back on it, it'll be my personal experience, but actually it's kind of the stories of the women. And I, you know, we walked together, and we walked in different times with twos and threes, and at the very end of the trip, they said, around a table again, what would you leave in the desert? What would you take home? What will you remember? Kind of similar to your question. And I had written down a story from each person. So I'd written down everyone's names and something unique that had happened with that person on that journey. And so it might be Valerie talking about Everest, and Muriel and I just lay down one moment and just looked up at the blue sky and just lay there in silence and looked at the blue sky and was just like in the hot sand, just lay there and was like, wow, look at this sky. It's amazing. And then Kimberly and I, the sort of the friendship we had, we were dancing and singing. We would spin around in circles the whole time. Janie, we had this little moment of like silence together and this gentle hug. And, you know, each of us, I just had like special moments with each of the women and heard about their lives and their stories. And so I think it's kind of sharing that kind of sisterhood on that walk that was really special, because there was my journey, but then it was also the journey of us as a group. You know, we did this as a group. We were the first women to ever cross the Namibian desert. You know, that wasn't me. That was all of us together and supporting each other and walking back with people who were maybe slower, and, you know, everyone worked together as a team. So I think it's that sisterhood piece. And then I think that the very end of the trip, we spent the night in a township in Panduka, is the name of this organization. And we met with the local women, and we danced together, like tribal dancing with them and singing, and we ate together and we shared stories. And these women are living in extreme, extreme poverty, and many of them from abusive home lives. And we all kind of gathered together, and that was kind of like kind of this full circle moment, you know, of this is why we're here. We're doing this to sort of shed light on empowering women. And we finished the trip by being with these women and sharing with them. And in the Oshawamba language, Panduka means wake up. And I thought that was kind of cool, you know, like that's what we're doing. We're waking up our senses. We're empowering women. Women on a Mission gave us the opportunity to go on this adventure. Women for Women International, all the work they do in these war zones is about empowering women, and then finishing the trip and being able to support local women. And we brought bags and bags from home of reading glasses and clothes and toys, and all of us brought stuff for them. And we were able to share that with them. So I think it comes down to that whole piece of empowering women to transform their lives, whether that be on an adventure all the way to, you know, a necessary need for someone who's really living a much more challenging life. And, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to have done what I've done. And I recognize that there's a lot of challenges out there. And so anything that we can do to shed a little light and on these organizations is important.
Well, Jill, this was fantastic. You're a great storyteller.
Wonderful. Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Great talking with you.
You as well. Tell the family hello. And yeah thank great. You so much for the time. This was awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Speak again soon. Bye.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.